Welcome to the Legal Moves Podcast. My name is Zachary Strebeck. I'm the host for the show, and I'm also a California game lawyer. With me today is a guest that I've had on a few shows before. He's the brains behind Overworld Games. Well, one of the two brains, right? They've released fan favorites Good Cop, Bad Cop, and New Salem. And their new game, Booze Barons, I think just wrapped up a successful Kickstarter as well. Welcome, Brian Hank.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Zach.
No problem. It's great to have you back. I asked Brian to be on today to discuss something that was prompted by a post that he recently made on the Stonemaier Games Kickstarter Lessons blog. He detailed his solution for getting board games shipped from China, which a lot of Kickstarter creators are probably curious about. So even when you're not shipping games, you may be shipping other types of goods, such as t-shirts or figurines that you've had produced as rewards for the Kickstarter. So, Brian, can you give us a brief overview of how you did your shipping and fulfillment for your latest board game?
Yeah. So we were actually kind of delivering two campaigns at the same time. We were doing New Salem, which is a bigger box. It's not a huge box, but it's still a pretty good size. It's about 1 foot by 1 foot and 2 inches. So it's a fairly standard board game size box, slightly bigger one. Mm-hmm. And then the first expansion to Good Cop, Bad Cop called Bombers and Traitors. And that was a pretty small box. That would have been, something like the size of like a coup box, right. One of the pretty smaller ones. So we kind of got a good feel for how Send from China is able to handle the bigger box game and the smaller box game, how much it costs, some of the challenges that other creators might run into. So the coolest thing. So let me just kind of describe Send from China a little bit.
You go back to the beginning. So you're using fulfillment company called Send from China, right?
Yeah.
Manufacturing in China.
Yeah. So, a lot of board games are manufactured in Shenzhen or nearby in China. Mm-hmm. And so if you are, why not? So like before Send from China, what a lot of creators would do would be to put all of their games that they manufactured in China onto a boat, send them to the U.S. And I guess I'm speaking more from the, the side of a U.S. creator.
Yeah.
But then they would go to a warehouse in the U.S. and then they would be fulfilled sent out all over the world. Some mm-hmm. even back to China, over to Europe, U.S., Canada, everywhere. And it would all come from the U.S. And that was mainly because most U.S. creators have their distribution and their warehouses in the U.S. And so that just kind of made sense because, why not put all of your games on a boat, one boat, instead of trying to kind of, maybe send them to a bunch of different places. So that's what a lot of people did. But then Kim over at Secret Base Games, he talked about this Send from China. And so when I started hearing about him talking about it, I was just, it was just incredible to think about how I wouldn't have to do that. And, I might have 1,000 or more backers who need their games first, and they're the first ones I want to get it. So why not ship them out from next door to, basically where my games are manufactured?
Right.
And then the rest of them I can send to my distribution or wherever I have my warehouse or warehouses. But I can at least get those games moving out to all my backers like right away. And so it's a huge benefit for backers to possibly, get their hands on a game a month or 2 months before they arrive in stores. And that's some value that I would get to give to my backers, which is so really cool. And it would save money because, if I can, let's say I print 3,000 copies and I have 1,000 backers, I can just put 2,000 copies on a boat and send that over to the U.S. instead of 3,000. So that's going to save me money. And I'm going to have to send them all over the world anyway, some to the U.S., some, up to Europe or Australia. So plenty of advantages to doing it this way.
So that all sounds great. So in reality, did it work that way?
It definitely was not perfect. I guess it kind of stems a lot of it from just the communication trouble. I can email someone over at Send from China and ask them how a feature works, and they'll tell me, but I mean, there's, their English isn't their first language. And so I found that it was kind of tough to get a very clear answer. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it was unfamiliar territory for me. I'd never used a service like theirs. My first campaign, Good Cop, Bad Cop, I personally put them in boxes and shipped them out myself. And so this was, you know, new to me. So I had a lot of questions. I didn't know exactly how it should work or even what questions to ask, but you know, I was kind of trying, and you're under the, you know, the timeline of the schedule that you promised your backers to when it was going to go out too. And for New Salem, you know, we were running kind of close to the end of that. And so we, you know, were a little bit rushed there or felt rushed, you know, probably shouldn't have been, but, so, I mean, I guess that's where it came from. The biggest problem was that, we didn't specify that we needed our New Salem games to go in a sturdy box. Okay. So they were just put in this thin plastic envelope with just like this little very thin layer of bubble wrap on the inside. And so, I mean, the box is great. It was manufactured by Panda, and you know, they're known for their quality. They're known for really good boxes. And if anyone were to look at this box, like it's a really, really good box, but when it's going through, you know, the Chinese postal system and goes, you know, across the ocean, who knows how, and gets, you know, then it even gets to the U.S. postal system. And there's just so many steps that it's going to take to get from, you know, like here to like a backer in the U.S. And so it just can't stand up to, you know, being dropped and smashed and a heavy box, you know, landing on it. There's really no protection. So we had a way too many, you know, people, you know, with damaged boxes that they received from our campaign. So that was for,
what's the solution there? What do you have to do?
Well, if, you can specify that you need it to go in a box, and I guess I was, I don't know, naive. I thought they, you know, that this is what they do. They do fulfillment.
Right.
And so that they should know, like, this is not going to be able to, like, this is going to be damaged if I don't put it into a box. And so I thought they would package it in a way that it would get to its destination, you know, undamaged, or at least a very small percentage, you know, but that just wasn't the case. So if I specify I need it to go in a box, or I need it to go in, you know, to be double boxed, or I can give them some more specifics, and you know, I would definitely pay for it, but it would be well worth it. I mean, if you get one backer with a damaged box, now you have to ship again, and that might be $20 or more, you know, to get to them, depending on where they live. So, yeah, I mean, plus the cost of the game, you know, it might be a $30, $40. You know, cost for you to replace that. So if I were to just spend, you know, 25 cents more or 50 cents more per game, you know, it would still be worth it, you know, especially because I don't want my backers to have damaged games when they get it from me. I want them to back my projects and be confident they're going to get a good game.
And you don't want those pictures out on the internet either, right? Because
it
becomes the first thing you see when you start Googling the name of the game or whatever. Yeah.
So that was New Salem. So that was the bigger box game. Mm-hmm. Bombers and Traitors, the Good Cop, Bad Cop expansion, that was in a small box. And, you know, we shipped those out at the same time. So those actually were, you know, luckily ended up being pretty good. We only had like one, I believe it's just one person who had a damaged box, or at least notified us that they had a damaged box from the Bombers and Traitors. So, you know, I guess maybe that padded envelope is good enough for a small box game. So if there are any listeners considering Send from China, you know, if you have a smaller box game, maybe, I guess, you know, you're going to have to make that decision. You know, do you want to put those in a box and, you know, pay the extra, or, you know, do you want to take a slight risk? But that might be good enough protection for a small box.
Do they have a website where they give you all these options, or is it sort of, is it a user-friendly experience working with them?
No, not at all. It's okay. So bad. It's the worst. I mean, like, even you'll click a button and, you know, to maybe like, put some money in your account, and you have to pay everything up front, which is, kind of a hassle. So you put money in your account and like you click a button, and normally like you'd think it'd be a pretty automated process, you know, like, you know, it's through PayPal. So like they just, you know, update it and you see it, you know, pretty quickly updated on the website, but it actually just goes to a person in China who has to like process the
manually update your payment.
Yeah. So it can take a couple days to do that. And so it's, you know, when you're on those type, you know, deadlines and schedules, you don't really want to have to wait for that kind of thing. But right. You sometimes.
Well, I mean, it's just another thing you need to build into your schedule, right?
Yeah.
Allow days and days for responses and things like that. Yeah.
And then as far as packaging, yeah, you don't know what you're going to get. And, you know, it's even just things like, you know, asking to put it in a box, and they're just like, you know, I'll get an email back like, so you want it in a carton? And I'm like, I don't know what that means. Yeah. And right. So after a while, like I figured out that just like a standard box, like a sturdy box, is they call it a carton. That's what you need to know to ask for.
Yeah. It might be helpful. Like if you had photos of what you want and you could send them and say, look, this is exactly how I want it. Or maybe for the future, after the first one, you can easily get through this process by.
Yeah,
really being specific. I don't know.
It's not a bad idea. That might work. I don't know what like supplies they have though. You know, for if they have something that it's just like a box, like I just want to protect it. I just want them to be, you know, extremely confident. You know, right. that when it gets to the recipient, that it's in good shape. However they want to do it, I'm okay with. But
yeah.
So actually, with New Salem, when I kind of did it in two ways, not necessarily for this purpose, but, you know, partially because I wasn't really sure. I'd never used Send from China before. So I sent like half of them out or so in the first wave and started getting some reports of some damage. And so I kind of held off and said, hold on. All right. What's going on here? And I kind of found out, got to the bottom of what's going on, that it just wasn't packaged well enough. And so then for the second wave, I did get them to put it in a carton, and they all seem to have been packaged really well and all arrived without any damage. So it does work as long as you kind of know what to ask for.
Great.
So hopefully I was a guinea pig for other people who may use them.
Yeah, it sounded like at least on the post on the blog, there were a lot of people. I still get emails about new comments that are going on there. So it sounds like it's a pretty popular post.
Yeah.
So on the Kickstarter Lessons blog, Jamie Stegmaier outlines his method of shipping and fulfillment all over the world. Can you explain? Do you know his method? I assume you've read up on that, but maybe not.
I actually don't know exactly what he uses now. He's famous for kind of the Stonemaier method of shipping, which is using Amazon fulfillment. But he not too long ago when we were recording this, posted something about how he's done using Amazon. He doesn't want to use them anymore. He had, you know, enough bad experiences with it. Mm. And honestly, when I first read that post, when he kind of announced this method, I was like, oh, wow, this looks really, really cool, but also really complicated. Like, man, you need to set up accounts, you know, at all these different Amazon websites or fulfillment centers all around the world. And you have to ship, you know, like to, you know, small, you know, like one pallet to each one, if you have enough backers. But, you know, I'm not as my campaigns aren't as big as his are by any means, by any stretch of the imagination. So he can send a pallet to each one. But for me, like I only have a couple pallets of games that I'm going to be shipping at all. So, you know, for me to break up shipments and it's extremely expensive for me to like send, you know, say 50 games to Australia or 100 games to the United Kingdom, mm-hmm. you know, like each one of those could be like $1,500 in order for me to do each one. So like I was crunching the numbers, and for a smaller campaign, like mine usually are, it just doesn't really make sense financially for me to do that. So that's one other reason I was really excited to hear about this Send from China option and why I wanted to give it a try, why I thought it would be, you know, worth it to give this a shot, because that wasn't going to work.
Right. So when you use Send from China, I know that one of the things Jamie had to do was have someone in Europe, like receiving the packages for him, because they were the VAT person or something like that. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on there. do you have to do any of that with ship from China, or they just take care of that?
Yeah. Well, so what Jamie does is all of his campaigns are EU friendly, AU friendly, so Australia friendly, mm-hmm. Canada friendly, and US friendly. And so what that means is just that people who back his campaign aren't going to have to pay anything when they receive it. They don't have to pay any VAT. They don't have to pay any customs fees.
Okay.
And the way you do that is by either registering your company in each of those areas. You go into Australia, register your company there, register your company in the EU, register your company in Canada. Mm-hmm. And then you can ship basically, you know, you are kind of like you're from Canada and shipping to all the people in Canada. You're right. From the EU, right. Shipping there. But another option would be to have a partner who is out there. So, I think he's got a partner in the EU who he can send it to them. What was the name of the company he uses? Can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but they will, he'll send his product to them, mm-hmm. and they'll send it out to backers from the EU. So there's no there as far as the backers know, they're, you know, it's being sent from within the EU, and they don't have to pay anything when they get it. So he does that, and it's great if you can do that. It's really tough to do using Send from China. So that is it's a pretty significant downside to using Send from China. They just don't have anything to really help you with that. Okay. Until recently, they recently announced an EU-friendly shipping option where you can actually send just like basically when you send when you do an order, if you're, let's say, 1,000 people, you're sending it out to backers, you choose which shipping method you want to use for each person. And so when I did my my most recent fulfillment, I used probably 12 to 18 or so different not necessarily carriers, but shipping options. And that was just based on the price, whether it had tracking or not, mm-hmm. And how long it was going to take. And so you can choose whichever ones you want to use. And so one of them now that they added was this EU-friendly method. So I do is say use this EU-friendly one, and then they kind of take care of the rest. They send it to Amsterdam, and then and then they'll send it from Amsterdam to everybody in the EU because Amsterdam's in the EU. So then that avoids any of those VAT costs that the EU is known for. So that is one option for EU-friendly, but there isn't anything for Australia or Canada or the US. So they give you part of the way there, and you definitely pay for it. I mean, you pay quite a bit more to use that.
Do you have to pass that on to the consumer, I guess, if they want to be and if they want to get it in the EU? You know, you just have to pay a little more. Is that
that's up to the creator. We subsidize some of those costs, okay. And then, you know, not all of that, but in the long term, if you have a game that's a higher priced game. They have to pay the VAT based on the price that they paid. So if they backed your campaign at a $30 level, mm-hmm. They're going to be hit with the VAT costs at $30. So they're going to have to pay a pretty big percentage of that $30 in VAT fees. So, I mean, if it's, you know, you can they'll pay a lot less to you, hopefully, if you use this method. Because you're sending it to them in bulk and you're sending it to Amsterdam possibly at cost. This will be cheaper in the long run for them if they just pay you maybe, you know, a couple bucks extra.
Right. Okay. Now, do you just ship games or do you specifically have any non-game physical rewards or anything like that?
No, we try to stay
away. Games?
Okay. Yeah, we try to stay away from that. It's just kind of a lesson we've learned over the, I guess it's only been, you know, 2 years or so that we've been in business, but mm-hmm. it's a lesson we've learned along the way that it's just the simpler that you can make your rewards, you know, the easier it's going to be to fulfill. And fulfillment is one of the, you know, right there along with manufacturing as far as your biggest costs. It's a huge cost and it's a huge amount of work that you have to do. It's complicated. It's risky. There's just so many ways to kind of screw it up. So if we can make it easier and still, you know, provide our backers with, you know, fun and interesting, and the reward levels that they want, that's really what we go for. But we try to simplify it as much as we possibly can. So yeah, we just usually just do games. Once in a while, we'll add on an existing game if it's kind of a similar style. You know, like for our most recent campaign, Booze Barons, we let people add on New Salem because they're similar size games, similar complexity, similar games in general.
Okay.
So we thought they might want both.
Perfect. Well, what if someone is, let's say they're making little figurines or something in China?
Yeah.
Will Ship from China also ship that, or can it be shipped in the same package as the games? Do they do that kind of thing?
They do, yeah. You have a list of items on your Send from China account. And so, like, right now, I think we have, like, four of them that we have copies there at that warehouse. And then it's very, very easy to just select which ones you want. So you can upload a template, which sounds easy. It's not easy at all.
Okay.
It's really, really difficult through the Send from China interface. And but you can upload it with how many of each item you want to go to each backer. So that's how we did it. That's perfect. How we fulfilled both campaigns at the same time. So we had those four different items, and we just selected how many of each person would receive. So if you had figurines, that would just be another item. You could throw that in with a board game. But then again, once you start doing that kind of thing, you just got to be really specific about how they package it. And, you know, once we had that first wave of New Salems that didn't go very well, that second wave, they did package it really, really well. They had, like, different, like, they had one layer of, like, maybe two games and then, like, a cardboard, like, protector, divider, and then another game on top of it and, like, with padding in there. So it's if you're specific, they can do a really good job packing okay. it. And recently, very recently, they actually announced that I think because of all this, they kind of got a lot of attention from the board game community after that Stonemaier Games post, and I know came over at Secret Base Games has been working with them quite a bit on packaging, that they've actually announced this special packaging just for, like, board game creators. I think they call it, like, like board game Kickstarter creators, where you can pay extra and they will actually put, like, plastic protectors on the corners. They'll have extra padding, better, like, thicker boxes. Mm-hmm. They have quite a few different options that you can choose which one fits your game. And they did it really just for Kickstarter board game creators. So that's something that I actually asked them. I emailed them, like, hey, let me get started now. Like, I had a game I was going to send out. Like, hey, let me give it a try with this game. And then they were like, we haven't actually rolled that out completely. <That's> So they announced it, they haven't actually, I don't know. We'll see how much it costs. I couldn't get a price from them either on how much each thing costs. So we'll see how much it costs and how well it's implemented, how easy it is to use, how easy it is to add on through their web interface.
Right.
So we'll see how that works. But I don't know. Hopefully it's going to work well.
Awesome. Well, that's great. Thanks for letting us know about how you're doing this fulfillment. I think listeners will find that very interesting.
But I guess I've said a lot of, I guess, good things and bad things about Send from China. I do want to be clear that this isn't necessarily my permanent solution for fulfillment. I mean, there have been enough problems. There's enough communication issues. I just don't feel confident that my backers are going to get, you know, a game in perfect shape. The time delay in shipping was very, very long. And especially, like, to Canada, like, it took, you know, 6 weeks or more to get to my Canadian backers. And just even to, like, to the U.S., sometimes it was just inconsistent how long it was going to take. Okay. You know, it was going to take 2 weeks or it was going to take a month or longer. I didn't really know. So I'm still on the search for my permanent solution for fulfillment. But for now, this is one I'm at least going to use for part of my fulfillment.
Okay, great. Yeah, it sounds like if you go in knowing what the reality is, you can better prepare for it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm glad to have you on to talk about that. So Let's talk about some legal issues related to getting things shipped from China. These were questions that you had that you sent to me, so I figured it'd be great to go over them. Now, I'd like to hear your perspective on these things. Definitely. I assume that you didn't just ask the questions because you want to hear answers from me, but maybe because you think it'd be good discussion topics.
Yeah. It was, these are more just kind of some questions that that I know I've been asked, and you know, we do on our podcast, the Forbidden Limb. We talk, you know, about a lot of design and publishing issues, kind of the board game industry questions, and so we get questions all the time from people just about this kind of stuff, and so these have come up, and so I just wanted to you know, bring them up here, and then we can both kind of answer some of them, hopefully get a few answers for people.
Right. No, it's funny because a lot of times someone who hasn't even shipped a game yet, they're just like, all their questions are, what if the worst possible thing happens? What do I do? And oftentimes you just have to think, well, why don't you wait and see if those things do happen? Because I think a lot of people ask, well, what if, I mean, someone like me is supposed to be thinking about those things, right? So what happens, like, for instance, your first question, what happens if an overseas partner does something you feel is illegal? Like they take your payment, but they don't do the agreed upon work. And so this is something that I've had clients ask me about. And I think he even wrote about it on one of my blog posts. You're taking a risk, right? Because you're working with someone who's basically working out a completely different legal jurisdiction. If you have a contract, even if you're hiring like an artist or something in Finland, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. You know, do you sue them in Finland or do you sue them in the U.S. and try to, you know, get them to come here? Let's say you sue them in the U.S. and you win a judgment against them, right? Then you have to go to Finland and go to their courts and get that judgment recognized, right? So you're just opening up a whole new layer of complexity in getting any kind of redress for legal problems. This is the way it, you know, unfortunately, the way it works. And so if you go to China and you're getting things shipped and the company just takes your money, well, you may have to contract with a Chinese lawyer to try and get that taken care of. Things don't exactly happen fast there. So, you know, you may be waiting. I mean, this is just sort of the risk that you're going through. And so you have to find, you know, the big thing is to find a reputable company that you know is not going to screw you over by reading blogs like the Kickstarter Lessons blog or listening to Forbidden Limb and getting these people's experiences. You don't want to be the first guy to work with a new company, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So like send from China, you just send them. So I knew my fulfillment was going to cost me probably around $7,500. And so you have to pay up front for them to do it. Right. So I was like, man, I don't know who this company is. It's like just a PayPal address that I'm sending to. So can I really send, you know, $8,000 to this, you know, person or company that I've never worked with?
Right.
And what if they don't, you know, what if they don't actually fulfill anything or it's disastrous? Like it kind of was for the first wave of New Salem.
Exactly.
And what do I do? I don't know. And it's hard enough in the U.S. to, you know, somebody steals my board game idea or something to sue them for it. You know, like then is it even worth the, you know, the fees and the effort, time, that kind of thing to get it, you know, to maybe win that case? I don't know. But when you go overseas, like, oh man, it's just even worse, even harder. And so, yeah, that's, I know that that's a concern, for a lot of people. And I guess it's a risk you do have to take, and it's a risk you take for doing business. And
yeah.
I don't know. Do you have any suggestions for people if they do, let's say you send from China or, you know, work with an artist, you know, overseas, or is there anything they can do to protect themselves?
Well, you'll find that in some other countries, people don't think of contracts the way that they think of them here in the U.S., right? You, what's written on the page isn't necessarily what the deal is going to be, and things could basically change depending on the circumstances, regardless of the actual written contract. And so to someone with a Western legal background like myself, that blows my mind. You know, I think, well, what's the point of even having the contract if it doesn't really matter? But I mean, it's just, it's, there are cultural differences that, that come into play that you may not be aware of. And it's not necessarily wrong. It seems like it's wrong to us, but look, you're going into another place and you want to take advantage of their, you know, the fact that everything's cheaper there. And, you just have to deal with the fact that the culture is going to be very different there as well. The legal culture. And now I know that there have been, there are pushes to normalize the legal system, but again, you're going to be dealing with I think a culture that, that maybe sees contracts differently than we do. And so again, if something goes wrong, you're probably, your best bet is probably to get someone local to help take care of that. Because like, if you contact me, I don't know, I don't know anything about the Chinese legal system. I'm not going to be able to help you. So, you know, that's, I mean, even big companies do that. When I was working for a movie studio, they had a problem in India, for instance, someone infringing on their trademark, they would contract with a local lawyer in India who would go and try to take care of that for them. Right. This is the way it is.
But even contacting you or, you know, they're a local lawyer, I'm sure that lawyer can recommend someone in that country. You know,
not necessarily, but we can certainly help. I mean, I don't know a lawyer in every country, but
sure,
you know, I could definitely help you through the process, probably, or just because I could be your point of contact with them.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, like, I think about like, how would I find a lawyer in China?
I would think that too. Yeah,
I would have no idea where to start.
I've never actually had to do that, so I'm I'm sure I could figure it out though better than you. Yeah. So. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I know these, a couple of these have come up even, with our company, where we've seen, you know, like YouTube videos where people are using like a bootleg copy of Good Cop, Bad Cop. And, you know, I see that and I'm like, well, I don't know. I guess I don't really care. You know, what am I going to do? You know,
right.
I don't really have any options. That it's just not going to be worth my time to like go try to find them, or
maybe
I could probably send them a like a cease and desist letter, probably, right?
There's layers of what you can do. So your first layer may be just sending them an email through YouTube and saying, "Look, I see that you're using a copy that's not official. You know, as the creator, we don't want those out there. Could you tell me where you got it?" Or, you know, if they made it themselves, then obviously they're probably not going to answer you, but you know, that's a problem. It's counterfeit goods. You may have trademark actions and things like that to go against them. So the first layer would be maybe just reach out to them. Then you bring the lawyer in and you send an official cease and desist letter. And then you can move forward with a lawsuit, or I don't know, you could have U.S. if they brought it in from out of the country. U.S. Customs could get involved if you have that's one of the benefits of a trademark registration, is that they can seize counterfeit goods and at the border if they're coming through and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's none of this stuff is easy, and a lot of times you just get ignored. But I think that doing something, if you really want to prevent counterfeit versions of your game out there, and so in your specific example, are you talking about like they've printed it out themselves and they're doing it, or it looks like it's produced, but it was just produced by some other
kind of hard. Kind of hard to tell. I'm not really sure. But then again, I mean, they're promoting our game too, and so maybe it's even beneficial to us to have more people playing it.
Right.
I mean, like there was a long time when it was really, really hard to get a copy of Good Cop, Bad Cop at all. And so if they, you know, that might have been, maybe they just, you know, printed one out themselves, and they're, you know, not selling it or anything like that. They're just playing it, and, you know, more people are playing it, more people know about it, and maybe they're going to, you know, buy it in the future, maybe, you know. So
right,
it's hard to know, yeah.
If they're not linking to some site where you could buy the bootleg version of it, then
right,
it may be okay, and maybe you can – maybe the proactive thing to do would be to contact them and say, look, I saw that you're using this, you know, fake version of the game. If I send you a new version, would you look at it again or whatever, you know, if you send an official version to them? I mean, if they have like 5 subscribers on their video, then it's not really worth it. But if it's a decent channel, you may want to look into at least starting a relationship with them and trying to get some sort of dialogue going on. That's not instantly accusing them, right? If they get the letter from the lawyer first, then it puts them on the defensive right away, right? And if you don't think they're doing really malicious things, then maybe you don't want to start that way.
That's true. Yeah. And another instance that, well, so we work with a lot of companies, international publishers, so outside of the U.S., who right. have a market, you know, for our games. They'll publish our games in, you know, in Poland right. or, you know, in Italy. And then they, you know, they know their market. They know all the stores. They have relationships there. So, you know, we give them all of our print files. You know, they give us like a small deposit up front. And then they manufacture the game. They translate it into another language or multiple languages. Mm-hmm. And then they manufacture it. And then they publish it. They sell it to retailers and distributors in their area. Because we can't really reach them, and we're reaching people that we otherwise wouldn't. But, I have, you know, they give me a report of their sales, you know, maybe every 6 months, and then they give me a cut of each one, you know, right. so it might be $1 or it might be 5%, of each copy that they sell. But I have no idea how many they actually made, how many they sold. We have a contract, you know, with them that's signed by both sides, but, you know, I still really don't know. And I really have no way to, you know, to keep an eye on them, you know, so I don't know. There's probably nothing I can do about that. Huh? That, I know that's one thing that's kind of come up that I wish there was some way for me to, at least, you know, keep an eye on it. Or if I think that there's an issue, you know, what to do about it.
Right. Well, I mean, some, you can, in a lot of contracts, licensing agreements like this, you have a clause where you can inspect their books and records, and you can go and check out what they've done. And so sometimes it's limited to once a year, or if there's a certain amount of discrepancy or something like that, and you have to pay the fees otherwise. So you can get a copy of their books, and but I guess if they're screwing you from, you know, the bottom, you know, maybe they have fake books. Right. Mm-hmm. So I guess the question is, if you really suspect that there's something going on, you again can either sue them in U.S. courts because you've made a contract with them, but then you have to get that judgment recognized in their home jurisdiction, or you go and sue them wherever they are. Right.
So maybe a lesson learned there would be to make sure that's in our contracts, because I don't believe it's in our standard contracts for this kind of thing. Okay. And so it's probably something that we should put in there, and other people who, you know, work with international publishers should probably do the same thing to make sure that's in there.
Yeah. Anytime there's some sort of royalty agreement or something contingent on the other side doing the math and figuring out what you're going to get paid, there's usually some sort of clause that allows you to inspect their records.
Hmm. And, you know, when we've made contracts with game designers for a game, that's usually not in our standard contract. So that might be a good thing for a game designer out there to make sure is in their contract with a publisher.
Yeah, definitely. It's always in the contracts that I make, that I draft for those things. But again, it's not in everything, and you never know. Yeah. Okay, let's do one more question.
All right.
I want to talk about. Well, let me, you have a question. What if I declare an item, or what if I declare a value on the items I'm shipping? It's way below the price my customers paid, so that they don't have to pay much or any VAT fees. Can you get in trouble? Who's going to stop me? Well, I mean, you know, generally what I tell people is if it feels wrong, it probably is wrong. And that's something where it definitely feels wrong, right? And if you have to ask, right. You're probably doing something wrong.
Right.
Yeah. So you're declaring a lower value. I mean, you're, obviously that's not legal, and can you get in trouble? I'm sure, I don't know the law for EU taxes, but I'm sure there is some sort of tax agency over there that will go after you if they find out that you're doing this. Of course, if they never find out, you know, whatever. I'm not advocating criminal activity, but you know, if they never find out, they never find out. It's like cheating on your taxes here. But
it's this came from quite a few people have asked this kind of thing. Like I have backers ask this of me sometimes to declare, say, you know, if New Salem costs $10 to make.
Right.
And they, you know, they buy it on as a reward level for, you know, 34. Do I put $34? Like I should put $34 on there, but I've been asked
put something else. Yes.
Yeah. The cost. Manufacture it.
It's like a teenager outside a liquor store, right? Asking you, giving you $20 to buy him some beer. You should never do it. Right. I mean, you just shouldn't. Right. It's, you know, you're, what you're doing is wrong. And if you're complicit in that kind of thing, then if there's some blowback, then you deserve it because you know. I mean, it's obvious what you should be doing. Whether or not you do that, I guess, is your decision.
And a lot of people don't really know. You know, they don't know, you know, what value. It just says, you know, what is the value? You know, okay. And so they don't really know what they're supposed to do. In looking into it, like, I had to do a bunch of research on this to make sure I wasn't breaking the law when I did the, you know, fulfillment. And it is the price that somebody pays. Like, that's what you have to put on there, your declared value.
Even if it includes shipping or something like that?
That, I think, varies by country.
Okay.
Whether you put shipping in there. But that's something that, I guess, I mean, you kind of have to just do the best you can. Send from China actually doesn't let you put anything lower. So, like, for you couldn't do an individual order that's going to be lower because you put that on there up front. You know, so you'd put $34 on there up front. And then if somebody asked you to do 10, you just can't. There's no way to do that. So. Right. I guess good or bad thing about using Send from China.
If they ask you that, just tell them, yeah, just email Send from China and good luck. Right.
Right.
You may or may not receive a response. Yeah. All right. Last question, real quick. Can your backers sue if you send them a damaged product? Yeah, probably. You know, they can sue you for anything. But is it worth it? I mean, you know, you're going to get a small claims lawsuit because I'm speaking U.S. only, but generally in the U.S., it's all going to be small claims if it's under, you know, $5,000. So if one game shows up and it's damaged, you know, their damages there are what, you know, $30 to $80, $100, whatever the game costs them. It's really just not worth it for them. They can do it. And if they want to push it, that's fine. But, you know, once you get that paper in the mail that's you're served with a notice of their lawsuit, then okay, send them a new copy and you're fine, right? You're taking care of that. It's easier than flying out to where they are so you can get sued there or having to take a day off and go to small claims court just to deal with this. So yeah. If you know, hopefully before you get a lawsuit, you get an email from them saying, hey, I got a damaged good. Right. So, if you step back and you look at it, you have a contract with them to send them a copy that's not damaged. Right. The reason they paid you the money. So you're breaking that agreement. So, yeah,
sure. And that would go, you know, that would go along with if you never got your game at all. If campaign fulfilled and nobody got their product or just you didn't specifically be the same kind of thing.
Well, and this is why there's a reason in California, when you're an individual, you can't be represented by a lawyer at small claims court. However, if you're a corporation or some other entity, you can be represented by a lawyer because the entity itself can't show up. Right. So you can have a representative go and that representative may be a lawyer. So that may be one advantage to forming some sort of LLC or corporation before you start selling these games. One of many advantages, believe me.
And
also the corporation itself would be liable for that damaged product rather than you personally. And not that one game doesn't really matter, but let's say every copy of the game that you create is damaged, right? And now you don't have the money to pay for a new manufacturing. You just have damaged products, right? So what happens then? Maybe you're going to get sued. Maybe not, but maybe a problem.
Yep.
All right. So that wraps this episode up. Thank you again, Brian.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So we're actually going to be talking to you again soon, maybe in a couple of weeks. We're going to discuss business partnerships and creating companies and issues like that. Right. So listeners, please subscribe and you'll hear Brian's melodic voice very soon. Brian, in the meantime, where can our listeners find you?
Just Twitter, Facebook. You can find me.
pretty easy to find me. But and Facebooks. What is the Twitter?
Just go to Twitter and look for Brian Henk, H-E-N-K.
Okay.
Or Overworld Games. You know, of course, both on Facebook, Twitter. We started Instagram not too long ago, and I'm liking that. That's a pretty sweet platform for just kind of. I don't know. It's just a little more fun. Less. I feel like there's less kind of marketing on it, so. You can find us there now, too, under Overworld Games.
Cool. You can find me at GameLawyerBlog.com. You can read more there about the legal aspects of game development. You can also check out my Instagram if you want, ZStreamBash. You can look at food pictures and pictures of the sky in Bangkok or wherever I happen to be at the moment. Nice. Also, make sure, help us out. Put a review on iTunes. You don't even have to put, like, text. Just click the stars and give us those reviews. You can also check out LegalMovesPodcast.com. Excuse me. Check out my Patreon campaign for the podcast at Patreon.com/LegalMoves. And allow me to thank our first two donors, Ruth Richardson and Satavi Nim. They are family members who and friends who have donated to the Patreon, but I am looking forward to having more patrons soon enough. All right, Brian, I will see you in the next time we're together.
All right.
All right. This has been Legal Moves. See ya.